The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I think the type of guys that we have, you know, no matter what kind of, you know, service time you have in the room, I think the main thing that I take away from that game is a group that continues to have good at bats, that pull in for one another, to turn it over to the next guy, take their walks, put together quality ABs, root each other on in every pitch with one another. Yeah, I think there's a lot of positives to take from today. It's a really good team over there. We fought right until the end, just came up a little short, but yeah, it's definitely a lot of positives to pull from a loss.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haugh on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
You heard David Ross talking about the rather obscure lineup the Cubs put on the field Friday against the White Sox. I'm David Haugh with Bruce Levine here on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. And it's time now to go to the guest hotline sponsored by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. And that is where we find man among men, Ron Coomer. Hey, Ron, how you doing this morning, Coom?
Good, David. Brucey, I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Splendid now that you're with us.
Even better now. You know, yep. Ron, I really appreciated yesterday you had a moment during the broadcast with Pat Hughes and Zach, and you talked about, you know, it doesn't really matter how obscure maybe the Cubs lineup, that's my word to describe the lineup they put out there, or how comfortable the White Sox are atop the Central Division. When the Cubs play the Sox, as somebody who has been in this series and someone who grew up in Chicago, special weekend out at Wrigley Field.
It is. It's special, you know, for the two groups that are playing. You know that. I mean, it's not like you think about it all season, David. You guys know, you know, baseball is such a, you know, it's a relentless schedule. But then when it, all of a sudden the series is here, right, and you're about to play in it, then it's you feel that, as Pat called it, the buzz of the city and the buzz of the ballpark. And they're your crosstown rivals. And, you know, there's all of those things. And it trickles all the way into our own families, right? I mean, you saw yesterday there's a whole boatload of people sitting together wearing two different color jerseys. And, you know, and it's, you know, it's part of it. And that was my family. We were the same way. You know, I was a Southside Cub fan as a little kid, and my grandfather was a Sox fan, and he used to complain having to take me to Wrigley Field. But, you know, that's what he did. And I think we see a lot of that, right? And then when you actually play the game itself, whenever you play in those series, the team that is a much more talented team or a better team at that current time, great. But the other team elevates themselves to a level that they're probably not accustomed to playing at because of the adrenaline and everything that goes on with it. And so it really, you get a lot more of a balanced look no matter what the names are on the back of the jersey. And I think we saw that yesterday.
Ron Coomer joining us on Inside the Clubhouse. He's David and Bruce. We're here with you every Saturday morning, 52 weeks out of the year, talking baseball on The Score. Coombs, Craig Kimbrell yesterday. Craig Kimbrell as the eighth inning guy. Give us some of your observations, what you saw and what you think the situation will be like for Kimbrell dealing with bouncing up and back between setup man and closer.
Well, the thing that kids, if I'm going to be honest, which I try to be, but you can't always say everything that's going through your head. If you're going to be honest, I think he's going to have a little bit of a hard time with that. And the reason being, most guys that have been very successful closers in our game for a long period of time, they thrive on that adrenaline, right? They're an adrenaline junkie, and they thrive on that, whether you're home or on the road. And I think for Kimbrel, I think pitching in the eighth inning, not that he's not going to do a great job, but I just think it's a tougher ask of a guy that's probably a Hall of Fame pitcher, and he's pitching in the eighth. You know, now in October, if the White Sox are in the World Series or they're in the ALCS, it might be a little different. But during the season itself, I think that gets a little difficult. It's a difficult ask for a guy of Kimbrel's stature in the league, but that's what they're doing, and that's what they got to do.
Coom, I want to come at you from a little different direction here. We know you're the Cubs analyst, do a great job every day sitting next to Pat. But when you look at this White Sox team and you're seeing it for the first time as a Chicago guy, but in person, I know you follow the league. We know you're a baseball guy through and through. They remind you of anybody? What do you see? What do you like? What worries you?
I would say they're a very, very talented young team. The things that in any young team that's breaking into this stature, so to speak, in our league, where you're all of a sudden now you're the elite team in the Central, you're the team. You if you're going to win in October, you can't make silly mistakes. You can't miss signs. You can't do all these little things that can happen to a group that's young. The Cubs went through it. Every team that I've been on went through it, unless you were a veteran team. I went to New York and played with the Yankees, and we didn't have any of that. We just won every day. But that was a very veteran-laden team, and you had a couple young guys. So I think the White Sox are a very talented team. I think they did an excellent job going out and getting Kimbrel and adding that piece to shorten the game, to move it from the closer to the end. I think that's a great move. They're a very good team. Do they remind me of anybody? I haven't seen them enough, David, to go, that's, you know, the Dodgers or someone like that. But I will say this. When they get Robert back and the left fielder can flat out rake, right? We watched him in Chicago in spring training for years with the Cubs. Eloy, he can hit. If they get everybody back and healthy and some of these young guys get a little time under their belt, they're going to be a handful for anybody that they play come October.
Coombs, what should Cub fans look for when looking at some of the guys that have been brought in? What do you look at? What should they look at when you see a Diekman or a Schwindel or Rodriguez? What should they try to define as they are looking at these players for the next 7 weeks and trying to project them toward 2022?
Well, I would say, first of all, competitiveness. Right? Do they have the skills, the talent, and the ability to compete at this level? This is the biggest jump by far, and I talked about this yesterday in our broadcast. The jump from the minor leagues to the big leagues is a massive jump, and you have to be able to compete at this level, and that doesn't mean one day. That means you've got to compete at this level every day. So you've got to be able to bring it every day. Like Wisdom has showed that he can be competitive every day, have good at bats, hit some home runs, but you know, he went through his hot streak and now he's still doing a good job of playing defense, doing the other things, not just hot with the bat, but having that competitiveness in your game to where you can compete and you could take that person out, Bruce, and put him on a frontline team and they fit. Right, that piece fits. That's what we've got to see here on the north side, to see if we can have how many of those guys we have before free agency hits in the winter.
Coom, Bruce said something interesting last hour about the direction teams like the Cubs may go in this next era of baseball, maybe leaning toward more contact type hitters. And we saw how the Cub offense was chronically broken and what they did dramatically to try to fix it. Now all those guys are gone, and so as you rebuild, do they try to bring into their organization or value contact hitters more than before? And is that a smart way to try to win in today's Major League Baseball?
Well, David, I do believe that player is going to be valued a lot more than he was, let's say, 5 years ago to 10 years ago. The contact player now, as we just saw, that you have to be able to move the ball and you have to be able to put the ball in play and do some of those things if you're going to compete. And if not, your offense, like the Cubs at times, the offense can look like it's broke. It's just, you know, you can't strike out 13, 14, 15 times in a ball game and think you're going to be successful night after night. So I would say, if you're looking to find something for this Cubs offense, probably just more balance more than anything else, right? You don't need all contact guys. You don't need all guys that try to hit 30 home runs. There's got to be a balance there. If you look at the 2016 Cubs that won a World Series, they had extreme balance. Ben Zobrist either hit leadoff or cleanup. And the reason why he hit cleanup wasn't because he was a power guy. It was because he could move the ball around the field and protect Anthony Rizzo or Bryant, who was ever hitting in front of him. You know, and some of the other guys put the ball in play. Montero, some of those guys, they're not big names, but boy, they put the ball in play, and that really helped that 16 team, along with the guys that could hit it out of the ballpark.
That's the voice of Ron Coomer. You hear him on every Cub game, along with Pat Hughes and Zach Zaidman, as they bring you Cub baseball 162 times a year. Coom, when you take a good look at what they're trying to do with Thompson and with Steele, what's your thought about when we might see them make some starts at Wrigley Field? And is this a get them some innings and then get them up here in September and see if they can be a part of that rotation going forward?
Bruce, I hope it happens soon. I really do. I think for both of those guys, they've both seen what it's like here in the big leagues. They're stretched out now. So for me, I would love to see them come to the big leagues, pitch here, and at times take their lumps a little bit, right? I mean, you don't know what you're doing at this level until you really have to try it. And then you can go back come October, November, December, and start preparing on what was successful for you and making the adjustments on what wasn't. But until you do that at this level, you don't know yet. So I hope they come up soon. I hope they pitch. I hope they do great. But if they don't, at least then they know when they're going home this winter what they need to work on to be prepared for the spring.
Okay, Coom, I'm anticipating the next level of Cub conversation. It's next week, and Brendan Davis has another great game at Double A. Yesterday, the number two prospect in the system, he homered, two doubles. He reached base six times in a doubleheader. And what you just said about the pitchers could also be applied to the position players. If you are going nowhere this season and the seven-week period that's remaining is an evaluation phase, why not take a look at Brendan Davis, one of your top prospects in the system?
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. If you feel like he's close to being a big league player, then absolutely. You know, I don't get to see him, but I saw him in that Futures game. That looked pretty good. You know, he's hitting balls, you know, 3 miles. That was fun to watch. If you think he's big league ready or close, then bring him up. I agree. This is the time to do all that evaluating. And I think it's important for guys to see what it's like to play here. I really do. Because that jump sometimes can be a difficult one, or they can get a little swagger to them and say, no, I can play here. I can be here, because it's not an easy transition, but I hope they do that. I really do. I hope they bring some of these kids up and they get a chance to play in front of our home crowd and see what it's like to be a Chicago Cub here in Chicago at Wrigley Field.
Coom, David and I had a discussion earlier in the show. I brought up the point that I thought that there's a much closer tie between the AAA hitter now and the major league hitter, and that they're certainly not the stars or the all-star players that we see go to the all-star game, but that there's a closer proximity between the good AAA player and the average major league player right now. And that's why we can see guys like Ortega with the Cubs and Wisdom with the Cubs and Goodwin and Hamilton with the White Sox contribute on a more daily basis. What's your thoughts on it?
That's a pretty good observation, Bruce. I haven't given that much thought, to be honest, but the well, I'll say this. I think guys understand the game. They've been taught hitting for a long time. And the disparity isn't as big. I think it's some of it has to do with the style of hitter right now, too, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're, you know, if there's a lack of contact throughout the whole league, when somebody comes up and let's say they have two or three punch outs in a game because they came up from AAA, it kind of blends in right now, right? Where, sure, you know, years ago, that wouldn't blend in. But I also think guys are bigger and stronger, and they can have an impact in the big leagues because everybody, you know, all these guys are strong. You look at Goodwin yesterday. He reached the seats. It's an Oppo home run. And, you know, I think that AAA player is probably better now and bigger, stronger, faster than he was, let's say, 25 years ago.
So, Coom, you get to the ballpark yesterday. It's the first home game since the Cubs traded Anthony Rizzo, Javi Baez, Chris Bryant, and the big three. And I know Kim, mm-hmm, Kimbrel was part of that, but it's the big three that was part of so many great memories and moments at Wrigley Field. How often did people, you know, you're a guy that people look at and they kind of associate with their experience at Wrigley Field as well. A lot of familiar faces, a lot of familiar sad faces yesterday. Being out there, that was kind of the conversation. What do you say to those people that are a little bit down in the mouth about what's going on here? And did it feel different yesterday going to the park knowing that that was the first time since the purge?
Yeah, I enjoy your experience, right, at the ballpark. It's still Wrigley Field. It's still a great time. It's Cubs Sox. The game was outstanding. I had people say, you know, I was there and it just didn't seem the same because of the names on the back of the jerseys. But then at the end of the game, they're like, boy, that was a great game. And that's what they talked about. It was just a great game. It was Cubs Sox. So I think all organizations go through these periods, these ups and downs and these flows of who's on your ball club and that. But I know right now Wrigley Field is still one of the best experiences in baseball you're going to get. And, you know, David's doing a good job of getting these young guys playing and being competitive. The games have been pretty good, actually. So I would say enjoy your experience first and foremost. That's the whole idea of it. It's entertainment, right?
Absolutely. Coombs, can't thank you enough for joining us as always. Look forward to seeing you here at the ballpark for the pregame. And just, you know, the idea that you put out there that big league baseball can't necessarily identify all the Cubs right now, but it's not like we haven't been through these things before on both sides of town, right?
Absolutely.
People still love their teams, and they will support them.
Couldn't agree more, Bruce. I look forward to seeing you boys here in just a little bit at the ballpark.
All right,
Coom. Good luck in the attendance game today.
Yeah. I'm taking a beating, David. I could use your help.
I know. Ron Coomer.
See you, boys.
Sits next to Pat Hughes and Zach Zaidman, does such a great job here on the score every game the Cubs play. He is there calling it, Bruce, and he's got the right perspective. Wrigley Field's still a special experience when the Cubs are playing the White Sox, and yesterday it certainly ended up that way.
You know, I don't think anything you and I say are going to make a Cub fan feel one way or another. That's already developed, you know, for many years. As a broadcaster, as a fan of both teams, there's an adjustment for us as well. The adjustment that, you know, we were looking at the Cubs as a team that should win and be contending to win the World Series every single year since 2015. And that adjustment coming to the ballpark and looking at a new start is, you know, a little difficult as well. I mean, we have, we might be the hardened media guys that talk on the radio and cover the game and write about the game, but we're Chicagoans too. We want the teams to do well.
Yeah, it's a strange time. When Zach Davies is pinch hitting against the White Sox, you know that you have reached a very strange time.
He had a hell of an at bat, too.
Oh, it was. For, for a pitcher, I think that you're probably right there, Bruce.
He hit the ball as hard as some of the people all day long. But, and you know, again, go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, we're talking about getting good at bats. We're talking about the White Sox and the Cubs. And how are the White Sox going to cure or address some of their offensive problems? Or are they as big as we have, made them out to be? We'll talk about that next here on Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine. I'm David Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.
They probably just doing what we do when we do when we're really tougher outs, and that's just to have a better strike zone. You know, we did some chasing tonight.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That was the voice of Tony La Russa from Thursday night. That's talking about the White Sox offensive struggles, Bruce. And you brought them up, and they're there, and they have obviously been an issue heading into Friday. You know, the White Sox had scored three or fewer runs in 12 of the previous 20 games. And they're not very good when that doesn't happen. Nobody really is, but the Sox 12-35 when they score three or fewer runs this season. You saw a little bit of a run explosion yesterday, if you will. When you're not scoring runs, that's a nice welcome sight to see on the scoreboard. But, Bruce, if you had to summarize the White Sox offensive struggles in the last month or so, how would you do it?
I would say concerning. Concerning from a very excellent team that has a clear pathway to be going to the playoffs. I think White Sox fans are excited about that and look forward to it. But I think there's some concern about being able to manufacture a run. And that is something that you have to do when you get toward playoff baseball, September baseball, October baseball, when the home run ball isn't there. This has not been, and it's contrary, of course, to recent White Sox teams, it's not been a home run hitting team. Now, there are a couple of good reasons for it, and one is the left fielder who was out until a week ago, who has 35 to 45 home run potential and should do that every year during his career. That's a good part of it. Luis Robert, who is a five-tool player, is going to hit 20 to 30 home runs when he starts peaking out in his career. So there are reasons why the offense has struggled and the home run ball hasn't been there. But more concern is manufacturing runs. And that's right. What the White Sox are going to have to do in these close games when they get down to playoff baseball. And they're facing great pitching on the other side as well as offering their own really good pitching. So there's some concern there. You know, Anderson is a good leadoff man. He's not a guy that walks. It's all predicated on base hits and swagger, and he brings a lot of that to the game. But having someone else up top and that can set the table for some of those bigger hitters and be able to score and run the bases a little bit, I think that's where I see the Moncada situation and that how that's impacted the offense this year.
Bruce, do you see Cesar Hernandez, who came over from the Indians, who, you know, has got some pop in that bat? Do you, and he's a switch hitter, so he gives you some lineup flexibility. We talk about the top of the order so often, setting the table for some of the big boppers who the White Sox certainly have, more than most teams. But do you see Hernandez fitting in as a number two hitter? Do you like him lower in the order? Does it really matter?
I mean, ideally, I want Moncada up there. Okay, I need him straightened out. I need him feeling good. I need him playing to the top level of his game. That's where he should be. A guy that hits the ball with authority and a guy that also runs the bases when he's feeling right. He's a potential 30 stolen base guy. We haven't seen that. A lot of it probably is still getting back to 100% physically, but I think he is this year because of COVID last year. You know, Hernandez is in the lineup today. Here's the White Sox lineup. Tim Anderson at short. Cesar Hernandez, second base. Abreu at first. Jimenez in left. Moncada at third. Goodwin in right. Garcia center. Collins catching. And Rodon. Okay, so like many offenses in baseball these days, David, the top five guys have to get it done, right? Because right. The bottoms of these orders, even on very good teams like the White Sox, they're not guys you can count on to bring offense every day.
Let me ask you this, and this is probably an overgeneralization, Bruce, but I'll ask it anyway. So urgency and guys who have something to prove, I think, tend to bring intensity to every at-bat because they have something to prove every at-bat. I think you see that maybe in the way that Brian Goodwin has responded to this opportunity, and he's slashing 246, 331, 465. He's got seven home runs and 142 at-bats. I think you see it in Andrew Vaughn, the rookie who hasn't proven himself yet, but he certainly is. You can see the ascension. You can see the way that he keeps improving. Even Gavin Sheets had a good at-bat yesterday. I wonder, is it... does complacency creep into guys who are more proven and have a 9.5 game lead and maybe don't value every at bat as an opportunity or have to face it as maybe the urgency to their status on this team? So you see maybe differences in the approach with the Moncada or a Goodwin. I mean, guys who are proven versus guys who are, you know, needing good at bats to keep their jobs.
You know, that's a really good question, David, but I think we have to put one more thing into that, and that is the 162-game season after 60 last year, and whether the wear and tear is actually physical, which results in mental lapses, okay? We've seen that in sports, you know, right. Forever. The fact that if there is fatigue physically, it can lead to mental mistakes. And that's why, you know, on a day like today where you see the lineup, You don't necessarily, I mean, you don't see Vaughn in the lineup today. You see Garcia in the lineup. He hasn't been there for 3 days. You see Collins in the lineup. He hasn't been there for a while. So these are some of the things that the manager has to be the master at figuring out the psychology and the physicality of their players in a given day. And then this unknown season of 2021 after 60 games last year and what players are actually capable of over 162 games right now.
Want to get your thoughts on Zach Collins. So there's so much that has been made of Sebi Zavala and his framing and his defensive prowess. And, you know, we talk about it every morning, I think, on the Mullin Haas show. And he certainly brings a lot to the table. Is Zach Collins going to be the odd man out because of that, Bruce? Can you see him being somebody as much progress as he has made himself this year? As we get closer to the playoffs, you start to wonder, okay, there's only so many spots. And if Gavin Sheets maybe is that left-handed bat that you have coming off the bench or using the outfield, where does Zach Collins fit into this equation when as you look long-term?
It just depends on what Grandal is capable of. You know, he's coming off of a serious knee problem, okay, and recovering from minor surgery on that knee. What will be the expectations? What will he be able to do? How often will they start him going toward the playoffs, or will they baby him a little bit so that he is a player that is peaking out in late September and early October? I don't know that answer. All I can say is that Collins has grown by leaps and bounds this year as an authority behind the plate, somebody that the Chicago White Sox pitchers trust throwing to. That said, still hasn't proved that he's a hitter, has trouble throwing runners out, still has player development to do. But I think just the leadership ability and the believability for the pitching staff is an essential part of what Collins has accomplished this year. So I don't know if he's the odd man out. We do know defensively that Zavala is a better catcher. Okay, we do know that. Let's just see when Grandal comes back what he's capable of doing. I am from the school of I don't depend on injured players until they've gone long past that injury. I don't depend on them on the field. I don't depend on them from coming back from their injury and being able to play. Even though they're cleared by medical people and they're out there, that doesn't make them ready to play baseball at the level that they're accustomed to or that we're used to seeing. So from all of that, I believe that Collins still has an important role on this team.
That sounds like a very reputable school to be from, Bruce. I think I would subscribe to that theory as
you
well.
Know, so some of that comes from me covering the game for a long time, and other of it is that I make it up as I go along.
That helps. That always helps.
Yeah.
You are the master of improvisation, Bruce. Yes, Zach Collins in the lineup today against Adber Alzolay. I got the Cubs lineup right here, Bruce. Ortega in center leading off, Contreras catching, batting second, David Bodie batting third, playing second base, Patrick Wisdom in left, Schwindel at first base, of course, fixture there, Matt Duffy playing third, Ian Happ moved down to seventh today in the order, playing right field, Andrew Romine back after his big day, playing short, and Adber Alzolay is the right-handed pitcher on the
mound
for
the Cubs. Did I detect some sarcasm?
Not at all. Not at all, no. I just,
that wouldn't be... Schwindel doesn't give you the feeling that he's the permanent replacement for Anthony Rizzo going forward?
Well, I don't know, Bruce. Where's Dykeman? Can we complain about no Dykeman today? If we want to be a lineupista, we can start to evaluate this.
I will go down at 11 o'clock. David Ross will have his media session with us, and I will ask, and if you want, I'll attach your name to it.
No, please don't. No, I think we can do without that. Quick question, though, before we get to break. In all seriousness, as we look at this Cubs lineup, and as Coom talked about this being a sort of a seven-week evaluation phase, Bruce, I have seen, and we both have talked about this, Ian Happ has been all over the lineup and all over the batting order and all over the field.
Yeah.
He batting seventh today, playing right field. How big of a stretch is this for him?
It's a very important stretch. It is for Bodie as well. These are very important times for these two guys because the organization has to find out if everyday playing is exactly what these guys are going to be all about in the future. And they've been an important part of player development for the Chicago Cubs. So the front office has put a lot into this, but are they extra men or are they everyday players? And I think if you look at any players at all, and you're a Cub fan during these next 6 weeks, just look at the ascension and the development of these two guys, and are they part of what Hoyer and the front office look at as everyday players with Cubs in the future? Because if they're not, there's going to have to be other moves made to put them in those situations where you can pencil in Bodie as your everyday third baseman next year, and you can pencil in Happ as your everyday left fielder next year. So very important times for both players.
That is the insight of Bruce Levine. I am David Haw. When we come back, one of our favorite segments, Chin Music, here on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
For some chin music.
Hey, Aunt, how about a warning?
Sure. Watch out you don't get killed.
Because sometimes in baseball, you've got to send a strong message, especially when someone has it coming. Each Saturday, David and Bruce come in high and tight with a response to something that deserves one, like this.
Once you got to third, we had the pitch runner ready because he's going to go on contact with the infield. We got to try and score him, so there's no way you can do that to Aloy. I mean, that would be I would be fired if you tried to make him do that. So you get Goodwin in there. He was sore at the plate, but he was, and I just talked to Aloy. The fact what didn't play the last four or five innings means he plays tomorrow, when you get that big smell. But it was mostly about runs. We needed to add a run, and the guy, once he got to first base, I thought about it. Pinch running for him. So I just think that it's more protecting his legs and trying to win the game at the same time.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score, David Hall, Bruce Levine. That was the voice of Tony La Russa talking about a decision to pinch run Brian Goodwin for Eloy Jimenez on Friday, Bruce. And this is chin music, and I can respect that. And I am all for the bubble wrap mentality when it comes to Eloy Jimenez. But, Bruce, tell me this. What's the difference between protecting Eloy Jimenez from colliding with the catcher at home plate and running into a brick wall in left field? If you're going to be cautious with him on the base paths, are you abandoning caution with him in left field?
It's a good argument. I guess that's the argument that Jimenez had this week when he said that DH is boring. I need to be out there on the field. You know, I wrote that story on 670thescore.com about the idea that, you know, he feels if he's ready to play, he can play anywhere. And he showed it in Kansas City when he came back and had a great throw from the outfield, cutting down a would-be tying run at home plate. So he has worked extremely hard to get in good shape and be ready to play every day in the outfield. The problem is that Eloy Jimenez has been injured every year, and in many cases twice or three times in 1 year during his entire career, every year. So there is a mode where you have to protect the player, but your point is well taken, David. How do you protect the player against the commonality of situations that arise when you're on third base and you have to slide into home plate and have a collision with a catcher? That's a part of just being a baseball player. Something I never liked about DH to begin with. And it is, I mean, let's say you're Tony La Russa, David, and I know you're a lot older and a lot richer, but let's just say for a moment you're Tony La Russa. What do you do to make sure you get the highest quality and the most reps out of a player that was injured for 4 months, and at the same time, you know, be aware of the situation that he's a ball player and he's got to feel like a ball player going out there every day?
You know what I do? I don't want to hear how bored he can be when I'm asking him to do what he does best. So if I'm the manager of that baseball team, I am managing certainly the personalities of 26 guys and the egos of all of them. But I also don't want to hear how my prize designated hitter is too bored to keep his concentration level high enough to let him contribute. Hand him a crossword puzzle, give him a video game, and set him up to the plate, because you're protecting him and doing what's best for the baseball team. You need him healthy, and him playing left field does not put him in the best position to stay healthy.
That's a real good theory. It probably would have worked in 1957. but with the modern player, David, I don't know if that works, because you have to make them happy. You have to be very sensitive about how you talk to them and how you have these conversations to get the most out of them. That's what we know about the players right now, is you don't just send them to their room without their dinner. They need to be talked to and respected, and I don't think that's a bad thing. All people should be respected at all times, but in sports, we have learned that their respect level with this new wave of young players that are stars in the game now have to be told on five or six different ways why something must occur and why it's being done, and that it's not being done to be punitive and to do something that is going to make them angry or make them look worse. It's more about getting the most out of them and being in the right position, as you said, David, to help the team win, which is the ultimate goal. But the me factor is very important these days.
Good explanation, Bruce. Quickly before we get out of here, Luis Robert's return is, quote, imminent, in the words of Tony La Russa. What does that mean?
I think you'll see him next week, right after the series. He'll be brought in playing center field. Knowing his injury is different, David, I don't think he'll play every day. I think he'll play once or twice and then sit down and rest, because think about how this injury took place.
Right.
It was an injury of him running down the bases at full speed, and then all of a sudden, internally, something going wrong without anything really being in his way. So I think, you know, with the player himself and the speed being an important factor, I think you'll see them being just a little bit more cautious with Luis Robert. That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
It's not based on anybody telling me that. It's just common sense in this situation.
What you're saying, Bruce Levine, is that when he gets to third base, he will be pinch run for.
By Eloy Jimenez.
Yeah, exactly. Well played, Bruce. Hey, we got a lot of people to thank. Jeremy Haber was great today, White Sox assistant general manager. Ron Coomer helped us out. Coom is the best. And Adam Studzinski, thank you very much for keeping us on the air. Bruce, have a lot of fun at the ballpark today. This was a fun show.
David, people can follow me on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine and on our website where I write every day Cubs and White Sox 670thescore.com. I'm going down on the field, cover both the Sox and the Cubs. We'll be with you all weekend long on the score on the Cub games as well. Don't forget Hit and Run tomorrow morning as well, 9 o'clock with our good friend Matt Spiegel. Have a great weekend, David.
Have a great day, Bruce. Have a fun at the old ballpark. I'll be back Monday morning, 5 o'clock. Molly and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Thanks for listening.
From the trusted team behind 48 Hours, welcome to Case by Case, your weekly update on the biggest true crime stories unfolding right now.
Nick Reiner remains in custody without bail.
Luigi Mangione accused of stalking and gunning down UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson.
From high-profile trials and stunning evidence to major breaks in cold cases. We'll follow it all, case by case. Follow and listen to 48 Hours, Case by Case, wherever you get your podcasts.